Poirot.
What else can I do? It lacks subtlety, perhaps, but it makes for safety. At any rate, one thing emerges plain to see.
What's that?
The beautiful Frederica Rice was not at Tavistock. Where was she? Oh, see, the handsome Lazarus has returned. She's telling him. He looks over at us. He's clever, that one. Oh, if only I knew.
If only you knew what?
What I shall know on Monday. You have no longer the curiosity, my friend? There was a time.
There are pleasures that it's good for you to do without.
What are you talking about?
The pleasure of refusing to answer questions.
Ah, c'est malin.
Quite so.
But here comes Mademoiselle Nique.
You see, Mr. Poirot, I'm not letting myself be scared by it all.
Évidemment, mademoiselle.
Dancing on the edge of death.
It is a new sensation, mademoiselle.
Yes. Rather fun.
I wish she hadn't said that, dancing on the edge of death. I don't like it.
I know, it is too near the truth. Oh, she has courage, that little one. Unfortunately, it is not courage that is needed at this moment.
What is, then?
Caution, my friend. Caution.
The following day was Sunday. A beautiful, calm English Sunday. All I wanted was to sit on the terrace and let the morning gently drift by. But Poirot was most unusually energetic.
Come, my friend, we will try a little experiment. Monsieur Lazarus and Madame Frederica have gone for a ride in the car and taken Mademoiselle Nick with them. The coast is clear.
We went down the steps from the hotel and walked across to the headland and came to an inconspicuous little gate, rather rusty on its hinges.
End house private.
The French windows onto the veranda were open, and we passed straight into the drawing room and up the stairs to Nick's bedroom.
You see how easy it is, Hastings. No one has observed us. We could do any little affair we had to do in perfect privacy, like cutting through the wire on this picture, so that it would be bound to snap before a few hours had passed.
It looks very heavy, that picture. Nick had a lucky escape. There's someone in the house.
Did I not say how easy it was? I think we should find out who this someone is.
What the hell are you doing in here?
Ah, it is Mr. Croft, is it not?
Yes, that's right, but I...
Let us go down to the drawing room. We can talk more comfortably there.
So what's all this about, then? How do you know my name?
I will introduce myself. Hercule Poirot, at your service.
The detective chap? Oh, I've heard all about you.
In Australia?
Oh, yes, yes. We followed lots of your cases. But the local paper said you were here.
The local paper?
The St. Louis Herald. Oh, the famous French detective.
Belgian. But it makes no matter. This is my friend Captain Hastings.
Pleased to meet you.
Oh, hi.
But what were you doing in Nick's room? Were you looking for something?
Oh, it's just all very simple. The other night, a picture fell from over Mademoiselle Buckley's bed. She may have told you about it.
She certainly did. She was lucky not to have her skull cracked open.
I promised her that I would bring her a special chain, one that would not snap. And since she told us that she would be out this morning, I take the opportunity to do the necessary measurements.
So, that's all that is. If you're not too busy, Mr. Poirot, could you spare the time to come back to the lodge? Have a cup of tea. Australian fashion, huh? Meet the wife? She'd be tickled pink to meet you.
You are too kind, Monsieur Croft. We shall be delighted. You have all the measurements correctly, Hastings?
What? Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Then follow me. The lodge is only just across the garden.
Have you been in England long, Mr. Croft?
We'd always wanted to visit the old country. We took a trip to the continent. Paris, Rome, Florence, all that sort of stuff. But when we were in Italy, there was this train accident. My wife was pretty badly hurt. Spine injury.
Oh, what a sad misfortune.
And so we came here. Found this place. Just what we were looking for. Not too many cars about. No noisy gramophones. Ah, here we are.
Cooey!
I brought someone really special for you, Mother.
I read all about that blue train case, Mr. Perot. That poor Mrs. Kettering and the Heart of Fire. But didn't I read somewhere that you'd retired, given up for good and all?
Ah, madame, you must not believe all you read in the newspapers.
So you still carry on the business?
If I find a case that interests me.
And you're sure you're not down here on business now, Mr. Poirot? Calling it a holiday may be all part of the game.
You mustn't ask Mr. Poirot embarrassing questions, Bert, or he won't come again.
Mr. Poirot and his friend were helping Miss Buckley get a new chain for that picture, Mother. The one that fell.
Yes, we were just measuring it up.
That poor little girl might have been killed. She's a live wire and no mistake. Not much liked in the neighbourhood, or so I've heard. Well, that's the way in these stuck-up English places. I don't wonder she doesn't spend much time down here. And that long-nosed cousin of hers has no more chance of persuading her to live down here than a woman does.
Don't gossip, Millie.
Aha. So the wind is in that quarter. Monsieur Charles Vyse is in love with our little friend.
Well, he's silly about her. But Miss Buckley won't marry a country lawyer. She's a sweet girl. But I'm concerned about her. She's had what I call a haunted look lately. And that worries me. I've got my reasons for being interested in that girl, haven't I, Bert?
No need to go into that, Mother. Now, Mr. Poirot, I wonder if you'd be interested in seeing some snapshots of Australia.
It was half an hour before we finally escaped, but the Crofts were nice people, I thought. Typical Australians.
You did not think that they were perhaps a shade too typical? Calling out cooey and showing us all those photographs on which, as it happens, neither of them appeared? Were they not perhaps playing their parts a little too thoroughly?
What a suspicious old devil you are, Poirot.
You are right, mon ami. I am suspicious of everyone, of everything. But then, Hastings, this is a situation in which we can take nothing and no one at face value.
On Monday morning, we had just finished breakfast when Nick Buckley was shown up to Poirot's room. The circles under her eyes were darker than usual.
I've had a telegram from my cousin Maggie. She's arriving at 5:30 this afternoon. I hope that makes you happy, Mr. Poirot.
I am very relieved to hear it. Some of my fears at least can be laid to rest.
Oh, I wouldn't count on it. Maggie's got no kind of a brain. Good works is about all she's fit for. That and never seeing the point of jokes. Freddie Rice would be 10 times better at spotting hidden assassins. And Jim Lazarus would be better still. He has hidden depths, says Jim.
And what about Commander Challenger?
Oh, George, he'd never see anything till it was under his nose. But he'd let them have it if it came to a showdown.
Well, let us hope that it will not.
Oh, I don't know. It's all great fun, isn't it?
Is it, Mademoiselle?
No. No, it isn't. I'm afraid. It's beginning to get to me. I always thought I was quite a brave person.
Oh, but you've shown the most wonderful courage, Miss Buckley.
I spend the whole time wondering whether something else is going to happen, and if it does, how it will happen.
Yes, that is the worst part of it.
This morning, I came here by the road. I simply couldn't bring myself to walk through the garden. I feel as though my nerve had gone all of a sudden, and that all this should be going on top of everything else.
What exactly do you mean by on top of everything else, Mademoiselle?
Oh, just what the newspapers call the strain of modern life, I suppose. Too many cocktails, too many cigarettes.
No, you are not being honest with me.
But I've told you every single smallest thing.
About the accidents, yes. But you have not told me everything that is in your heart, in your life.
Can anyone do that?
Perhaps, Mademoiselle, it is not your secret.
If you think I know something about somebody else or have my suspicions, you're wrong. It's having no suspicions that's driving me mad. I'm not a fool. I can see that if these accidents aren't accidents, they must have been engineered by somebody very close at hand.
And you have no idea whom that person might be?
Not in the very least. Do you know a queer wish I have always had? I want to produce a play at End House. I've seen all sorts of plays performed there in my mind. And now it's as though a drama really were being staged there. Only I'm not producing it. I'm in it. I'm probably the person who dies in the first act.
Now, mademoiselle, this will not do. This is hysteria.
Oh. Did Freddy tell you I was hysterical? You mustn't always believe what she says. There are times when she isn't quite herself.
Tell me, mademoiselle, have you ever thought of putting End House up for sale?
I've thought about it, but that's as far as I've ever got.
Would you consider selling it if you got a good offer?
No, I don't think I would. Not, I mean, unless it was such a ridiculously good one that it would be foolish to turn it down.
Quite so, I understand.
By the way, there are fireworks tonight, Regatta Week and all that. I'm having a little dinner party at 8 o'clock. You can see the fireworks splendidly from the garden. Will you come?
Oh, we will be enchanted, will we not, Hastings?
Many thanks, Miss Buckley.
Till this evening, then. Nothing like a party for reviving the flagging spirits.
That morning we called on Charles Vice, or rather at Messrs. Vice, Trevanion and Bettesworth, in the main street of St. Lou. He was tall, pale and impassive, and beginning to go a little bald. Poirot had brought a document with him on which he said he needed Mr. Vice's guidance. It was all settled in a matter of minutes.
I am very much obliged to you. For a foreigner, you understand, these legal matters can be very difficult.
Oh, I'm only too glad to have been of assistance. May I ask who recommended me to you?
Miss Buckley. Your cousin, is she not? I tried to see you on Saturday morning. When was it, Hastings?
At about 12:30.
But you were out, I think.
That is right. I left early on Saturday.
Mademoiselle, your cousin must find that large house very lonely. She lives there by herself, I understand.
That is so.
Tell me, Mr. Vice, is there any chance of the property ever being on the market?
None at all, I should say.
You must understand, I do not ask idly. I myself am in search of such a property. The climate of St. Lou enchants me. It is true that the house itself is in very bad repair, but I gather there has been very little money to spend on it. You do not think it possible that Mademoiselle would consider an offer?
I'm certain that nothing would induce her to sell. My cousin is quite fanatically devoted to the place. It is, you understand, a family home. Selling it would be quite out of the question.
And what impression did this Charles Vyse make on you, my friend?
A very negative one. The kind of man you'd never remember on meeting again.
Did you notice anything that struck you as curious in the course of his conversation with us?
Well, I certainly wouldn't have said that Miss Buckley was fanatically devoted to End House. She's fond of the place, but nothing more than that.
And did you notice anything else?
He wasn't in his office at 12:30 on Saturday morning.
The time that somebody took a shot at Mademoiselle Nick. So, we cannot clear Mr. Vice of suspicion.
Nick Buckley had done her best to give End House something of a festive air for her dinner party. When we arrived, she was dancing by herself to the gramophone, wrapped in a highly exotic kimono covered with dragons.
Oh, it's only you. What a nuisance.
Oh, mademoiselle, we are desolated. Whom did you hope we might be?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound rude. I hoped you might be from the dressmakers. I've been waiting for my frock to arrive for hours. The brutes promised me faithfully it would be here by 6:30.
There is to be a dance tonight at the Majestic, is there not?
Yes, we're going there after the fireworks.
Oh, Nick, have they still not brought your dresses? Too bad.
I'm expecting it any minute.
Well, they're certainly taking their time.
This is my cousin Maggie. Maggie, these are the famous sleuths who are protecting me from the mysterious would-be assassin. Take them into the drawing room and let them tell you about it. Now that really must be the dressmakers.
We were left alone with Maggie Buckley, and I formed a most favourable impression of her. A quiet girl, pretty in the old-fashioned manner. Her face was innocent of makeup, and she wore a simple, rather shabby black evening dress. She had frank blue eyes and a rather nervous smile.
Nick has been telling me the most amazing things. Someone took a pot shot at her with a gun in a hotel garden, and a boulder missed her by inches, and the brakes of her car have been tampered with. Surely she must be exaggerating. Whoever in the world would want to kill Nick?
Nevertheless, I assure you, mademoiselle, that it is the truth.
Well, if you think so, Mr. Poirot, I must say, Nick seems rather fey tonight. I can't tell what's the matter with her.
She's behaving with great courage, determined to carry on as usual.
It's the only way, isn't it? I mean, whatever one's feelings are, it's no good making a fuss about them. It only makes it uncomfortable for everyone else.
At about 7:30, Frederica Rice and Mr. Lazarus swept in. She was wearing a blue gown that made her look more like a Madonna than ever, although a very fragile one. Nick came dancing in to greet them.
What a simply wonderful shawl, Nick. Red like old Chinese lacquer. Where on earth did you get it?
It's a family heirloom, Jimmy. Brought back by great-great-great-uncle Timothy from his travels in the East.
It's quite amazing. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, it's warm, that's the main thing. I shall need it while we're watching the fireworks.
That black dress sets it off marvellously. I don't think I've ever seen you in black before. I thought you hated yourself in it. Is there any particular reason?
Oh, I don't know. Is there a reason for anything?
Where's George Challenger got to tonight? I thought you said he'd be here.
He had to go to Plymouth. I expect he'll arrive sometime or other. Maggie, I can't remember whether you've met Mr. Lazarus.
Mr. Lazarus?
We went in to dinner. The food was indifferent, the champagne excellent, the conversation rather uneasy.
It doesn't look as if there's much hope for that poor chap who was trying to fly around the world.
Oh, you mean Michael Seaton?
Yes. If he'd succeeded, he'd have been the hero of the day. He's the kind of man England can't afford to lose.
Nick and I met him at the Touquet. She made quite a conquest. Didn't he take you up flying with him?
Yes, at Scarborough.
Have you done any flying, Captain Hastings?
Oh, there's the telephone. It's bound to be for me. Don't wait. It's getting late, and I've asked people around to see the fireworks.
I glanced at my watch. It was just 9 o'clock. Dessert was brought in, and the port. Poirot and Lazarus talked about art. Frederica Rice gazed abstractedly out of the window, and I did my best to keep a conversation going with Maggie.
Well, I do so agree, but it's always like that, isn't it?
Come on out, all of you. It's nearly time for the fireworks, and the animals are coming in two by two.
We all trooped dutifully out into the garden. I suppose that Nick had invited around 12 people, none of them very interesting. Charles Vice was there, and Mr. Croft from the lodge.
It's too bad that Mrs. Croft couldn't come. We ought to have carried her over on a chair or something.
It's bad luck on Mother altogether, but she never complains. She's got the sweetest nature in the world. Good one.
I'm freezing. I'm going to run in and get my coat.
Oh, please, let me, Miss Buckley. Oh,
thanks all the same, but you wouldn't know where to find it. Oh, Maggie, be a darling and get mine too.
I don't think she heard you. I'll get it. I need my fur wrap. The shawl isn't nearly warm enough. It's the wind.
That is all they can think of to say. In the end, it grows monotonous, do you not find? Oh. And the grass, it is damp to the feet. Oh, I shall suffer for this. I shall get a chill.
A chill? On a lovely night like this?
A lovely night? You say that because the rain does not pour down in sheets. But I tell you, my friend, if there were a little thermometer, you would see.
Must admit, I wouldn't mind putting a coat on.
You are very sensible.
Shall I bring yours?
Oh, it is the dampness of the feet, I fear. Would it be possible, do you think, to lay your hands on a pair of galoshes?
Not a hope. That kind of thing isn't done, Poirot.
Then I shall go back and sit in the house. Just for the fireworks, should I catch a fluxion de poitrine? Let us go in, my friend. We are all children at heart. Les feux d'artifice, the party, the conjurer. Mais qu'est-ce que vous avez?
There, Poirot. In front of the French window. Someone's lying huddled on the ground.
The scarlet Chinese shawl. Oh, mon Dieu, it has happened. In spite of everything, in spite of all my precautions, it has happened. And this time, the murderer has succeeded. In spite of everything, it has happened. I should have foreseen. Not for an instant should I have left her side.
You mustn't blame yourself, Poirot. If somebody was so determined to kill Miss Buckley...
I'm sorry I've been so long, Maggie. I couldn't find my...
Oh.
What is it? What's happened? Maggie. Oh, Maggie.
Yes, Maggie. I thought that it was you, mademoiselle.
Is she dead?
Yes, mademoiselle. She is dead.
Why? Who could have wanted to kill Maggie?
It was not her they meant to kill, mademoiselle. It was you. They were misled by the shawl.
Oh, my God. Why couldn't it have been me? I don't want to live. Now. I'd be glad. Happy to die.
Take Mademoiselle Nick into the house, Hastings, and then telephone the police. Tell them someone has been shot. And then get back to Mademoiselle immediately. She must on no account be left on her own.
I helped the half-fainting girl through the French windows of the drawing room and laid her on the sofa. I was trying to locate the telephone out in the hall when Ellen, the housekeeper, suddenly appeared.
What is it, sir? Has something happened?
Yes. Where can I find the telephone?
There's nothing wrong, is there, sir?
There's been an accident. Somebody's been hurt. I must ring the police.
Who's been hurt, sir?
Miss Buckley. Miss Maggie Buckley.
Miss Maggie? Are you sure, sir? Are you sure it's Miss Maggie?
Of course I'm sure. Why?
Oh, nothing, sir. I thought it might be one of the other ladies. I thought it might be Mrs. Rice.
Look, please, tell me where I can find the telephone.
It's just through there, sir, in the little room under the stairs.
Thank you.
If you'd like me to...
No, that's all. Oh, can you tell me where I can find some brandy?
It's on the little table by the dining room window, sir. But wouldn't it be better...
I'll see to it. Now, leave me. Please.
Yes, sir. Of course, sir.
I made my report to the police and rang up the doctor, and then took Nick a glass of brandy. She was trying to sit up.
It's so awful. It's all so awful. Everything.
I know, my dear, I know.
No, you can't know. It's all such a waste. If only it had been me.
You mustn't say
that. No, you don't know. Poor Maggie. Poor dear old Maggie, who never harmed a soul in her life. We shared all our secrets together. That this should happen to her. I feel as though I killed her.
Poirot remained out in the garden, conferring with the doctor and the police for what seemed like hours. Eventually he came in with the inspector, who was clearly no stranger to Nick.
Not impeding traffic this time, Inspector.
This is a terrible business, Miss Buckley. Mr. Poirot tells me that you were shot at, in the grounds of the Majestic Hotel the other morning.
That's what he told me. I thought it was a wasp, but... apparently it wasn't.
And I gather there were some peculiar accidents before that. I'd just like to know how it came about that your cousin happened to be wearing your shawl tonight.
We came into the house to fetch our coats. It was rather cold watching the fireworks in the garden. I threw the shawl onto the sofa here, and Maggie and I went upstairs. I got the coat I'm wearing now and found a wrap for Freddy.
Freddy?
My friend, Mrs. Rice. Then Maggie called out that she couldn't find her coat. She went downstairs to look for it, but she still couldn't find it. I called down to tell her that I'd bring her something of my own, but she said it didn't matter. She'd take my shawl. She must have gone out then.
No, you mustn't distress yourself, Miss Buckley. Just tell me this. Did you hear the shot, or shots?
No. All I could hear was the fireworks.
That's just it. You never notice a shot with all that going on.
Probably the work of some homicidal maniac. Well, I won't need to ask you any more questions tonight, Miss Buckley.
Thank you, Inspector.
Good night, Miss. I'm more sorry about this than I can say.
I have been talking to your doctor, and with your approval, of course, mademoiselle, we think it would be best if you were to spend a few days in a private nursing home.
Because of the shock?
I want you to feel safe, mon enfant, and I want to feel that you are safe. You understand?
Yes, I understand, but I don't think that you do.
Hmm?
I'm not afraid anymore. I don't care one way or another. If anyone wants to murder me, they can.
What's happened? There's a policeman at the gate. He said there'd been a murder. Is it Nick?
It's all right, George. Don't be an idiot. I'm quite safe.
God, but somebody's dead. The policeman said so.
Yes, Maggie. Poor old Maggie.
Now come, Miss Buckley. I will take you to the doctor's car. We will ask the housekeeper to pack a few things for you.
Come. That's very considerate of you, Mr. Poirot. I don't want to stay here any longer.
What's the matter? Where's he taking her?
To a nursing home. It's all been the most terrible shock for her.
What a simply ghastly tragedy. Poor Maggie.
Come and have a drink, Commander. You're all to pieces.
I don't mind if I do. You see, I thought it was Nick who'd been killed.
I doubt if I shall ever forget the night that followed. Poirot was a prey to such an agony of self-reproach that I was quite alarmed.
Ah, what it is to have too good an opinion of oneself. I am punished. I was too sure of myself.
No, no.
I had put a cordon round Mademoiselle, and the killer slipped through it under our very eyes. And now the position is changed for the worse. It may mean that not one life, but two will be sacrificed.
You really think, then, that Nick Butler's life is still in danger?
Oh, my friend, for what other reason did I send her to the nursing home? I take the doctor into my confidence. He will make the arrangements. No one, not even her dearest friend, will be admitted to see Miss Buckley. You and I are the only ones permitted.
You don't think that the inspector may have had a point, that it was the work of a madman?
No. I am more than ever convinced that the murderer is someone in Mademoiselle's own circle.
But surely tonight has ruled out that possibility. We were all together watching the fireworks.
Now, could you swear, Hastings, that no one left our little company there on the edge of the cliff? Is there any one person whom you could swear you had seen all the time?
No, I don't think I could. On different occasions, I noticed Frederica Rice, Lazarus, Croft, and Vise, but all the time, no.
Exactly. And yet, where is the motive? Who can conceivably have had a reason for wanting to do away with Nick Buckley? But always we come back to the same problem. What is there to inherit? That telegram I sent the other day.
Oh, yes. You were very mysterious about that.
It was to an art expert in London. I wanted him to come down and inspect the portrait of Miss Buckley's grandfather, for which Monsieur Lazarus had offered her £50. Now, supposing, for instance, that it were worth several thousand. Oh, it is far-fetched, but we must neglect nothing that may bring us nearer the truth.
And what did he say?
He will come down tomorrow to examine it. Oh, but now I need to employ the little grey cells. I advise you, Hastings, to go to bed.
Nope. Not unless you do.
Oh, most faithful of dogs. But you cannot assist me to think. At least, I beg you, take the easy chair. You might find yourself taking, forty blinks.
It was daylight when I awoke. Poirot was sitting where he had been the night before. His attitude was the same, but his eyes were shining with that queer, cat-like light that I knew so well.
Tell me, Hastings, the answer to these three questions. Why has Mademoiselle Nick been sleeping badly of late? Why did she buy a black evening dress? Why did she say last night, I have nothing to live for now?
Well, as to the first, she said she'd been worried lately.
Exactly. What has she been worried about?
And as for the black dress, well, every woman wants it changed sometimes.
Oh, for a married man, you have very little appreciation of feminine psychology. If a woman does not think she looks good in her colour, she refuses to wear it.
And the last, about having nothing to live for, it was a natural thing to say after that dreadful shock.
No, Hastings, it was not a natural thing to say. We have there a sudden psychological change. Now, what was it that caused that change?
I've no idea.
Think, Hastings. Think. Use the little grey cells. She was not like that before dinner. What happened towards the end of the meal?
She went out to take a telephone call.
Ha! You have got there at last. She went to answer the telephone, and she was absent for a long time. 20 minutes at least. Who spoke to her? Or was there really a telephone call at all? In those 20 minutes, I am convinced we shall find the keystone of the mystery. I know I am right.
I had a bath and a shave and went down to breakfast. There was nothing about the evening's events in the morning papers, only confirmation that Captain Seaton's plane had crashed in the Pacific and there was no longer any hope of survival. I was still looking through the papers when Mrs. Rice came in and asked if I could take her up to see Poirot.
Madame Rice, enchanté, please sit down.
Thank you.
You too, Hastings.
Thanks.
Monsieur Poirot, I suppose there's no doubt that this business last night was all part and parcel of the same thing, that the intended victim was Nick.
I should say there was no doubt at all.
Nick bears a charmed life.
Luck, they say, goes in circles.
I owe you an apology, Monsieur Poirot. Until last night, I really didn't believe that Nick was in any real danger.
Is that so, madame?
I can see that everything now will have to be gone into very carefully. And I imagine that Nick's immediate circle of friends will not be free from suspicion. Ridiculous, of course, but there it is. Am I right?
You are very intelligent, madame.
You asked me some questions about Tavistock the other day. As you will find out sooner or later, I might as well tell you the truth. I did not stay at Tavistock.
No, madame?
I motored down to this part of the world early last week with Mr. Lazarus. We didn't wish to arouse more comment than necessary. We stayed at a little place called Shellacombe.
Oh, yes, about 7 miles from here.
May I be impertinent, madame?
Is there such a thing nowadays?
Perhaps you are right. How long have you and Mr. Lazarus been friends?
I met him 6 months ago.
And you care for him, madame?
He's rich.
Oh, Lala, that is an ugly thing to say.
Isn't it better for me to say than to have you say it for me?
Oh, well, there is always that, of course. May I repeat, madame, you are very intelligent.
You'll be giving me a diploma soon.
There is nothing more you wish to tell me, madame?
I don't think so. I'm going to take some flowers round to Nick and see how she is.
That is most amiable of you, madame, and thank you for your frankness.
Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot.
Goodbye, Madame Rice. She is intelligent, bien sûr, but not so intelligent as Hercule Poirot.
What do you mean?
That it is all very well to push the richness of Monsieur Lazarus down my throat.
Yeah, I must say, that rather disgusted me.
No, mon cher, you always have the right reaction in the wrong place. It is not a question of good taste. If Madame Rice has a lover who is rich and gives her everything she wants, then obviously she would not need to murder her devoted friend.
Oh.
Précisément.
Why didn't you stop her going to the nursing home? They'll never let her in.
Oh, why should I show my hand? Is it Hercule Poirot who prevents Madame from seeing her friends? It is those tiresome doctors and nurses.
Look here, Monsieur Poirot, what's going on? I rang up that damned nursing home where Nick is and asked what time I could go round and see her, and they say the doctor won't allow any visitors. I don't believe that Nick really isn't up to seeing anyone. I think you're at the bottom of this, Monsieur Poirot.
Now, listen to me, mon ami. If one guest is admitted, others cannot be kept out. Others whose motives might not be as above suspicion as those of the good Commander Challenger. You comprehend? It must be all or none. And since we all wish for the safety of Mademoiselle, it must be none.
Point taken. No embargo on flowers there, is there? Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. I'll send some straight away.
And now, while the impetuous commander and Mrs. Rice and perhaps the rich Mr. Lazarus all encounter each other in the flower shop, you and I will drive quietly to our destination.
And find the answer to your three questions.
Well, if you wish, but as a matter of fact, I already know the answer.
Huh? When did you find out?
While I was eating my breakfast, Hastings. It stared me in the face.
Tell me.
No. I will leave you to hear it from Mademoiselle.
Good of you to come.
You must be brave, mademoiselle. There is always something to live for.
I wish I could believe that.
May I offer you my deepest sympathy?
So you know, there's no point in trying to hide it any longer. Now that I shall no longer see him again.
Courage, mademoiselle.
I haven't any courage left. I've used up every bit over these last weeks.
Regard the poor Hastings. He has no idea what we are talking about.
Michael Seaton, the man who was trying to fly around the world, I was engaged to him.
Oh,
I'm very sorry, Miss Buckley. He died like a hero.
You heard the news last night?
Yes, it was on the wireless. That telephone call was just an excuse. I wanted to hear the news alone.
And how long had you been engaged to him?
Since just after Christmas, but it had to be kept secret.
Why was that?
Because of Michael's uncle, old Sir Matthew Seaton. He was a complete crank. Thought women ruined a man's life. Somebody had jilted him, I think. He was frightfully fond of Michael. Oh, he put up the money for the Albatross and the round-the-world flight. If Michael had pulled it off, well, he could have asked his uncle anything. He'd have been world-famous. His uncle would have come round.
So you told no one? Not even Madame Rice?
Oh, sometimes I wanted to, frightfully. Especially when his plane was reported missing. It was awful not being able to talk to anyone.
You do not think that she may have guessed?
I don't think so. Of course, she used to hint at things sometimes, about Michael and I being great friends and all that.
But am I not right in supposing that Michael Seaton's uncle died a week or so ago? I seem to remember reading about it.
Yes, that's right.
And did you not consider telling Mrs. Rice even then?
I suppose I might have told anybody. But Michael's round-the-world flight was on the front page of every newspaper. It would have seemed rather boastful to break the news that I was engaged to him. And Michael would have hated the publicity.
Yes, I agree. You could not have announced it to the world at large. I only meant that you could have mentioned it privately to a friend.
I did sort of hint it to one person. I thought it was only fair. But I don't know how much he took in.
You told this person because he was in love with you?
Perhaps.
You once mentioned that you had made a will. Where is it, mademoiselle?
Oh, it's knocking around.
At Inn House?
Yes, but I can't say exactly where. I'm frightfully untidy. It's probably in the writing table in the library, or it might be in my bedroom.
You permit me to make a search?
If you want to. Look anywhere you like.
You see, Hastings, I was right. Always I knew there was something lacking, some piece of the puzzle that was not there.
Do you mean that this Michael Seaton business has some bearing on the case?
Oh, ma foi, do you not see? It gives us what we have been looking for, the motive.
I may be very dense, but I can't see it.
Now, just over a week ago, Sir Matthew Seaton dies. He was a millionaire, one of the richest men in England.
Yes, but...
One step at a time. He has a nephew whom he idolizes and to whom we may safely assume he has left his vast fortune. Last Tuesday, Michael Seaton was reported missing, and the following day the attacks began on Mademoiselle Nick's life.
But I still don't...
Supposing, Hastings, that Michael Seaton made a will before he started on his flight and left everything to his fiancée.
That's pure speculation.
Perhaps, but it must be so, because... If it is not, there is no meaning in anything that has happened. Oh, it is no dilapidated house that is at stake, but an enormous fortune.
But if nobody knew of the engagement...
Somebody did know. Somebody always knows. If they do not know, they guess. Madame Rice suspected. Mademoiselle Nick admitted so much. And she may have had a way of turning her suspicion into a certainty.
How could she do that?
Well, for one thing, there must have been letters from Michael Seaton to Mademoiselle Nick. And it is all too evident that she leaves things here, there, and everywhere.
And Frederica Rice probably knew about the terms of her friend's will.
Doubtless. So this narrows down our list of suspects. I dismiss Commander Challenger. I dismiss Mr. Lazarus. I dismiss the excessively Australian Mr. and Mrs. Croft. So, only two people remain.
One is obviously Frederica Rice.
Yes. She is indicated very clearly. Apart from End House itself, which was left to Nick's cousin, Mr. Weiss, everything was to go to her. If Mademoiselle Nick had been shot instead of Maggie, Mrs. Rice would be a very rich woman.
I can hardly believe it.
You mean that you can hardly believe that a beautiful woman can be a murderess? Then what about our other suspect? Charles Vice.
But he only stands to inherit the house.
Yes, my friend, but he may not know that. Did he make Mademoiselle's will for her? No, I think not. He may well believe that his scatterbrained cousin never made a will at all, and that he will inherit as next of kin.
You know, that really seems much more probable.
Yes, that is your romantic mind, Hastings. That well-known figure of fiction, the wicked solicitor. But it is true that Mr. Vice would be more likely to know about the pistol and more likely to use it.
And to send that boulder crashing down.
Perhaps.
It really is amazing the way Nick has escaped.
Yes, and I can take no credit to myself.
Providence?
Mon ami, you say that in your Sunday morning voice of gratitude, without reflecting that what you are really saying is that Le Bon Dieu has killed Maggie Buckley.
Really, Poirot?
But I will not sit back and say Le Bon Dieu has arranged everything. I will not interfere, because I am convinced that Le Bon Dieu created Hercule Poirot for the express purpose of interfering. It is my métier.
The French windows of End House were, as usual, wide open. Poirot rang the bell to summon Ellen, who showed not the least surprise on seeing us.
Search where you like. The police have been all over the garden since early this morning. I don't know whether they found anything.
Were you very surprised last night when you heard that Miss Buckley had been shot?
Yes, sir. Very surprised. I can't imagine anyone being so wicked as to want to harm Miss Maggie.
If it had been anyone else, you would not have been so surprised,
I don't know what you mean, sir.
When I came into the hall last night, you asked if anyone had been hurt. Were you expecting something of the kind?
You wouldn't understand, sir. You see, this is in the good house.
But you mean that sometimes in an old house there is an atmosphere of evil?
That's it, sir. Bad thoughts and bad deeds to it. It's like dry rot. You can't get rid of it. I always knew something bad would happen here one day.
In an old house, there are sometimes secret hiding places. Do you know of any here?
Well, sir, there is a kind of sliding panel thing in this very room.
Huh?
I remember being shown it as a girl. Only, no, I can't recall where it is.
Big enough for a person to hide in?
Oh, no, sir, no, it's just a little cupboard place. About a foot square. No more than that.
Ah. Well, thank you, Ellen. We shall not need to detain you any longer. We will begin our search in the library.
What was all that about?
The secret chamber. I thought it might have appealed to you, Hastings. And I wish to rid myself of the possibility of the unknown intruder. Factor X, let us call it. But it is of no consequence. Let us see if the will is among the papers in Mademoiselle's desk.
It took us some time to go through them. Everything was in complete confusion. Bills, receipts, invitations, all jumbled up together.
But no sign of a will. The only item of interest is perhaps this letter.
Darling, party was too marvellous. Feel rather a worm today. You were wise not to touch that stuff. It's too hard to give up. I'm writing to the boyfriend to hurry up the supply. What hell life is. Yours, Freddy. This must be from Mrs. Rice.
Dated last February. She takes drugs, of course. I knew that as soon as I looked at her.
Really?
You can see it in her eyes. And then there are her extraordinary variations of mood.
Well, that must have been what Nick meant when she said Mrs. Rice was not always herself.
Undoubtedly. Ah, well, we have drawn a blank here. Let us try Mademoiselle's room.
Surely, Poirot, those are underclothes. I mean, we can hardly...
Decidedly, my poor Hastings, you belong to the Victorian era. Young ladies are not ashamed of their underclothes nowadays.
I don't see any need to search through those things.
Écoutez, mon ami. Clearly she does not lock up her treasures. If she were to hide anything from sight, it would be underneath the stockings and the petticoats. Here are... And here, if I do not mistake, are the love letters of Michael Seaton.
Poirot, you really can't do that. It isn't playing the game.
I am not playing a game, my friend. I am hunting down a murderer. Now come, you might as well read them with me. Console yourself with the thought that the faithful Ellen probably knows them by heart.
New Year's Day. Darling, the new year is in and I'm making good resolutions. It seems too wonderful that you should actually...
February 8th. Dearest love, how I wish I could see you more often, but honestly it might upset the whole apple cart. Uncle Matthew has got such a bee in his bonnet about...
April 18th. Marriages. Darling, the whole thing is fixed up. If I pull this off, I shall be able to take a firm line with Uncle Matthew, and if he doesn't like it, what do
Dearest,
I
care? I'm off tomorrow. Somebody said I ought to make a will, so I have, on a half sheet of paper, and sent it to old Whitfield. I remembered that your name was really Magdala, which was clever of me, so that's it. I've simply written, I leave everything to Magdala. So, Hastings, it is as I told you. We now know that the fact that Michael Seaton made a will in favour of Mademoiselle Nick is actually recorded in writing, and with the letters so casually hidden, anyone could read them.
Ellen?
Almost certainly. Or Frederica Rice. Or even Mr. Weiss.
Or Ellen could be in league with one of them. Lazarus, perhaps.
Aye, she's possible, my friend. With the fortune of one of the richest men in England at stake, who might not find the temptation impossible to resist? But which of them fired the shots that killed that poor girl, Hastings? Which of them?
Again already, Monsieur Poirot. I hardly expected to see you so soon.
Yes, mademoiselle, I am like the Jacques in the case, always popping up again. This will of yours. Hastings and I, we have searched all over End House, but we find it not. Think. Try to remember when you saw it last.
The trouble is that I never have particular places for things. I probably shoved it away in some drawer or other.
You did not put it in the secret panel by any chance?
The secret what?
Your housekeeper, Ellen, says there's a secret panel in the drawing room.
Oh, I've never heard of such a thing. I suppose Grandfather must have known about it, but if he did, he never told me. Are you sure Ellen isn't making it all up?
No, mademoiselle, I am not at all sure. Oh, but we are wandering from the subject. Your will, the last will and testament of Magdala Buckley.
I put that in, last will and testament, and said pay all debts and testamentary expenses. I remembered that out of a book I'd read.
You did not use a will form, then?
Well, there wasn't time for that. I was just going in for my appendix op. Mr. Croft said will forms could be very misleading.
Mr. Croft? The fellow who lives in your lodge?
Yes. It was he who asked me if I'd made one. I'd never have thought of it myself.
Very helpful, the excellent Mr. Croft.
He got Ellen in to witness it. Oh, of course. Oh, what an idiot I've been, letting you hunt round End House. Charles has got it. My cousin, Charles Weiss.
Ah, so that is the explanation.
Mr. Croft said a lawyer was the proper person to have charge of it, so we sent it to Charles. I should have remembered. He sent me those carnations.
They're pretty.
And the roses are from George, and the lilies are from Freddie. Oh, and look here. Grapes. Don't they look scrumptious?
Oh, you have not eaten any of them?
No. Not yet.
You must eat nothing that comes from outside. Nothing, you comprehend?
You really think they might try again?
No, do not think of it. You are safe here. But remember, eat nothing that does not come from the nursing home. And now, mademoiselle, if you would be so good as to write a note to Charles Weiss, authorizing him to show us your will. We have just time to catch him while he is still in his office.
I beg your pardon, but I really am at a loss to understand.
Has Mademoiselle Buckley not made her instructions clear?
But my dear sir, no will has been entrusted to my keeping.
Come on.
Well, as far as I know, my cousin never made a will. She certainly never consulted me.
But she wrote it herself, you understand?
On a sheet of notepaper. She posted it to you.
Well, in that case, all I can say is that I never received it.
Oh. Then there is nothing more to be said. There must be some mistake.
Certainly there must. I never received anything of the kind.
Is he lying, do you think?
Impossible to tell. One thing is clear. He will not budge from the position he has taken up.
So, what do we do now?
We go to see the crowds, to see if they remember what happened. It seems to have been very much their doing.
Of course I remember. It was when she went in for her appendix operation.
It probably wasn't appendicitis at all. These doctors, they're always cutting you up if they can. It wasn't the kind you have to operate on. She'd had indigestion and one thing and another, and they'd x-rayed her and they said out it had better come.
Well, I asked her if she'd made a will. Well, more as a joke than anything else.
She wrote it out there and then.
And what was done with it?
I posted it off to Vice myself in the box by the gate.
Mr. Vice says he never received it.
You mean it got lost in the post? But that's impossible, surely.
Anyway, you are certain that you posted it?
Certain, sure. I'll take my oath on it any day.
So which of them is telling the truth? Croft or Vice?
I don't see what Croft would gain by lying. The will's got nothing to do with him. And his statement tallies exactly with what Nick said.
You are right. But all the same, I am glad that Monsieur Croft was doing the cooking when we arrived. He left an excellent impression of a greasy thumb and first finger on a corner of the newspaper that covered the kitchen table. I managed to tear it off unseen by him. We will send it to the good Inspector Japp at Scotland Yard. I cannot help feeling that our genial Monsieur Croft is too good to be genuine.
That afternoon, the police sent round to us a very curious piece of evidence, which they had turned up while searching the garden of End House. A torn scrap of paper.
Must have money at once. If not, you know what will happen.
Do they say whether there were any fingerprints on it?
There were none. Of course, it may have nothing to do with the case. Does the writing look at all familiar to you?
Oh, that reminds me of something. That note from Mrs. Rice that we found in Nick's desk.
Yes, there are resemblances. Yet I do not think it is the handwriting of Mrs. Rice. Come in.
Oh, Commander Challenger.
Just looked in to find out if you were any further forward.
Ah, parbleu, at this moment I am feeling that I am considerably farther back. I seem to progress en reculant.
One step forward and two steps back, eh? I've been hearing all about you, Monsieur Poirot. You'll get to the bottom of it, all right.
That I swear to you. I am the dog that stays on the scent and does not leave it.
Got any ideas?
I have suspicions of two people.
I suppose I mustn't ask who they are.
I should not tell you. I might probably be in the error. But tell me, Commander, you would like, I think, to marry Mademoiselle Nick.
I've always wanted to marry her.
But Mademoiselle was engaged to another man. And she has died the death of a hero.
So it's true. Nick was engaged to Michael Seaton. I heard a rumor this morning.
You never suspected it before?
I knew she was engaged to someone. She told me so 2 days ago. But she didn't give me a clue as to who it was.
Entre nous, Michael Seaton has left her, I fancy, a very pretty fortune. She weeps for her lover now. But the heart consoles itself.
So that's where you've got to, George. They told me I might find you here.
Good afternoon, madame.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Rice.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry to intrude. I merely wanted to ask George whether he'd got my watch back.
I called for it this morning. Here you are.
It was a watch of rather unusual shape, round like a globe, set on a strap of plain black moire. I remember that I'd seen a similar one on Nick Buckley's wrist.
I hope it'll keep better time now.
It's rather a bore. Something's always going wrong with it. Am I interrupting a conference?
No, indeed, madame. We were only talking gossip. How quickly the news has spread that Mademoiselle Nick was engaged to that brave airman who perished.
So Nick was engaged to Michael Seaton.
Does it surprise you, madame?
A little. I don't know why. He was certainly very taken with her last autumn. They went about a lot together. And then after Christmas, they both seemed to cool off rather. As far as I know, they hardly met.
They kept their secret well.
On account of old Sir Matthew, I suppose. He really was a little off his head.
You had no suspicion, madame? And yet she was such an intimate friend.
Nick can be a close little devil when she likes. But I understand now why she's been so nervy lately. And I ought to have guessed from something she said the other day.
Your little friend is very attractive, madame.
Jim Lazarus certainly seemed to think so at one time.
Oh, everyone falls in love with Nick at some time or other. Oh, my God.
What? You are not well, madame?
No, I'm all right.
What?
George, darling, don't look so worried. Let's talk about something exciting. I want to know if Monsieur Poirot is on the track.
It is early to say, madame.
Yes, I suppose that's... I'm sorry, I've got ahead. I'll go and lie down. Perhaps tomorrow they'll let me see Nick.
You never know what that woman's up to. Nick may be fond of her, but I don't believe she's fond of Nick. But there, you can't tell with women. It's darling, darling, darling all the time, when damn you would probably be closer to the truth.
Challenger was in an expansive mood and insisted on accompanying us down to the flower shop in St. Lou, where Poirot was endlessly indecisive about what he should send to Nick. Eventually, he settled for orange carnations in a gold basket tied with a large blue bow, accompanied by a card on which he wrote with an ornate flourish...
With the compliment of Hercule Poirot.
On the following day, the inquest on the death of Maggie Buckley took place in the old courthouse. Her father, who had come down from the north of England, formally identified the body, and I gave evidence of finding it. Proceedings were adjourned for a week, and Poirot decided we should set off for London.
All is peaceful here. Mademoiselle is safe in her nursing home, and the watchdogs, therefore, can take leave of absence.
Our first port of call was Messrs. Whitfield, Pargeter and Whitfield, solicitors both for Michael Seton and his uncle Sir Matthew. They confirmed that Seton had in fact left a will, a scrap of paper, but perfectly legal, bequeathing everything to Magdala Buckley.
Making her, as the worthy Mr. Whitfield so bluntly put it, a target for any ambitious fortune hunter. So, that is settled, mon ami. It was as I thought. Now let us join the good Inspector Japp for dinner at the Cheshire Cheese.
I thought you'd given it all up and were growing vegetable marrows in the country, Poirot.
Ah, oh, I tried, Japp, I tried. But even when you grow the vegetable marrows, you cannot get away from murder.
Well, you mustn't be depressed, old cock. Even if you don't see your way clear, well, you can't go about at your time of life and expect to have the success you used to. We all of us get stale as the years go by. Got to give the young uns a chance, you know.
And yet the old dog is the one who knows his tricks. He is cunning. He does not leave the scent.
Oh, I thought we were talking about human beings, not dogs.
Why, is there so much difference?
It depends upon your point of view, or the dogs. You really are a caution, Poirot. You always were. You look just the same. Hair a bit thinner on top. But the face fungus fuller than ever.
Come on, what is that?
Japp is congratulating you on your moustaches.
Oh, they are luxuriant, yes?
Well, anyway, I've attended to that bit of business you asked me to look into. The fingerprints on the scrap of newspaper you sent me.
Yes?
Nothing doing. Oh. Whoever your Mr. Croft may be, he hasn't passed through our hands.
Is he known in Australia?
Oh, it doesn't look like it. I wired Melbourne. But they've got nothing on anybody of that name or description.
Uh-huh. It was worth a try, at least. And what about the elegant Mr. Lazarus, the art expert who knows so much about cars?
The firm's got a good reputation. Quite straight and honourable in their dealings. They're in a bad way financially, though.
Why is that?
A slump in the art market, or so they tell me.
Did you ever get a report on that painting, Poirot?
Oh, yes. It is worthless. £20 at most.
Now, how about a bit of stilt in a glass of port?
It's on its way.
Sorry I couldn't come up with anything, Poirot. Barking up the wrong tree, I expect.
Perhaps. Poirot is a good dog, but sometimes he follows the wrong scent. And sometimes, when there is no scent to follow, he noses around, seeking always something that is not very nice.
It's not a nice profession, ours. And yours is worse than mine. Not official, you see. And therefore, a lot more worming yourself into places in underhand ways.
I do not disguise myself, Shap. Never have I disguised myself.
You couldn't. You're unique. Once seen, never forgotten.
Ah, vous croyez?
Only my fun, don't mind me. But here's the Stilton. And the port.
It turned out to be a very merry evening talking over the good old days. But I could see that Poirot was worried about the case. I had the feeling that for once he was going to fail. We caught the train back to St. Lou the following morning. There was a message waiting for Poirot asking him to telephone the nursing home. Urgently.
Come on. Say it again, I beg. When? Oh, yes, yes, I will come at once.
What is it?
Why did I go away, Hastings? Why did I go away?
Tell me what's happened.
Nick is dangerously ill.
Oh.
Cocaine poisoning. They have got at her after all.
It's been touch and go, but she's going to be all right. The trouble was not knowing how much she'd taken of the damn stuff.
She will live.
Oh, yes, she'll live.
But how did it happen? Who has been allowed in?
Nobody has been allowed in.
But then...
It was a box of chocolates.
But I told her to eat nothing. Nothing that came from outside.
I don't know about that. It's hard work keeping a girl from a box of chocolates. She only ate one, thank goodness.
How was it done?
Quite clumsily. The chocolate cut in half, the cocaine mixed with the filling, and the chocolate stuck together again. An amateur, homemade job.
May I see Mademoiselle?
If you come back in an hour, I think she'll be well enough.
Escape number 5, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh, Mademoiselle.
Your old nursing home hasn't proved so safe after all.
If only you had obeyed orders, Mademoiselle.
But I have.
You were supposed to touch nothing that came from outside.
No more I did.
But these chocolates...
I thought they would be safe. After all, you sent them.
Huh? I never did anything of the kind.
Oh, but you did. Your card was on the box.
What?
It's in the drawer of my bedside table. See for yourself.
Ah, here it is. With the compliments of Hercule Poirot.
You see?
I did not write this.
It looks very like your handwriting, Poirot.
It was so like the card that came with the orange carnations. I never doubted that the chocolates had come from you.
Why should you doubt? Oh, but he has genius, this man. Genius. With the compliment of Hercule Poirot. So simple. I have been tricked. Outwitted as though I were a little schoolboy. But it shall not happen again, I promise you. Come, Hastings.
What was so strange was that Poirot had no difficulty in tracing where the box of chocolates had come from. It had been delivered by Mr. Lazarus. He told us the chocolates were a gift from Mrs. Rice, and that she had asked him to take them to the nursing home.
What's all this about Nick being taken ill?
Oh, it is a most mysterious affair, madame. Tell me, did you send her a box of chocolates yesterday?
Yes. She asked me to get them for her.
She asked you to get them?
Yes.
But she was not allowed to see anyone. How did you get in?
Oh, I didn't. She telephoned. She asked me to send her a 2-pound box of Fuller's chocolates.
How did her voice sound? Weak?
No. On the contrary, it was quite strong. But different somehow. I didn't realise it was she who was speaking at first.
Until she told you who it was?
Yes.
Now, are you sure, madame, that it was your friend?
Well, it must have been. Who else could it be?
That is an interesting question, madame. Now, could you swear that it was your friend's voice?
No, I couldn't. She certainly sounded different. I thought it was the phone or perhaps her being ill.
Would you have recognised the voice if she hadn't told you who it was?
No, I don't think I would. But who could it have been, Monsieur Poirot?
That is what I intend to find out, madame.
What exactly has happened to Nick?
She is ill. Dangerously ill. Those chocolates were poisoned.
The chocolates I sent her? But that's impossible.
Not impossible, madame, since she is at death's door.
Oh, my God. I don't understand. The other, yes, but not that. But they couldn't be poisoned. You're making some dreadful mistake, Monsieur Poirot. It can't have been the chocolates.
I understand nothing, but nothing. I am in the dark. I am a little child. Who stands to gain by Mademoiselle's death? Madame Rice. Who buys the chocolates and admits it? Madame Rice. And Madame Rice takes cocaine. There is no mistaking it. And there was cocaine in those chocolates. What does she know, Madame Rice? She knows something, but I cannot make her speak. Oh, I tell you, Hastings, it is all very dark, very black.
Always darkest before dawn.
Oh, spare me the proverbs, Hastings. Now, if you would be the good friend, the good, helpful friend...
Yes?
Go out, I beg of you, and buy me some playing cards.
I suspected it was simply an excuse to get rid of me. However, I misjudged him. That night, when I came into his sitting room at about 10 o'clock, I found him carefully building a house of cards. It was an old trick of his to calm his nerves.
One needs the precision. One card on another, so, in exactly the right place. And that supports the weight of the next card. And on top of that, I place another... But I have it, Hastings! I have it! Mademoiselle Nick is dead.
What? What's happened?
No. Not really dead, but it can be arranged. Yes, for 24 hours it can be managed, with the help of the doctors and nurses and the police being on duty.
But what's the point of it?
4 times the murderer has tried and failed. The 5th time he has succeeded. We tell everyone that Mademoiselle Nick is dead, and we wait to see what happens.
The events of the next day are completely hazy in my memory. I was unfortunate enough to wake with a fever. I have been liable to these bouts since I contracted malaria some years ago. I spent most of the time dozing in an armchair with a rug over my knees, so that much of the day takes on in my memory the semblance of a nightmare, with Poirot coming and going as a kind of fantastic clown.
Comment ça va, mon ami?
Oh.
I come this moment from ordering a wreath, immense, stupendous, and large quantities of lilies. Everyone orders something, each more exotic than the last. My little plan, it will make the fortune of the flower shops.
I dozed off for an hour or so, and when I opened my eyes, Poirot was back again. Clearly he was having the time of his life.
I shall not dress for dinner tonight. I am too much the broken old man. I shall eat hardly anything. The food untasted will remain on my plate. But in my room I will consume some brioche and some chocolate eclairs, which I had the foresight to buy at a confectioner's.
And you? Some more quinine, I think.
Ah, my poor Hastings.
When I next awoke, he was sitting at a table writing.
I am compiling a list of questions concerning each person. They may have no bearing on the crime, but they are things that remain unexplained. Would you like to hear?
Yes, I would. I feel rather better, I think.
Very well. I will read them to you. A. Ellen. Is she speaking the truth about the secret panel? If there is such a thing, why does she not remember where it is? Has she read Michael Seaton's letters? B. Mr. and Mrs. Croft, where do they really come from? Is there some possible connection with the Buckley family? C. Mrs. Rice, does she know that she is Mademoiselle's residuary legatee?
Very likely, I should have thought.
Who is the boyfriend mentioned in her note who supplies her with cocaine? Why did she suddenly turn faint that time in this room? Is she lying about the telephone conversation? What did she mean when she said, I can understand the other, but not this?
Yes, I've been wondering what she meant by that.
D. Monsieur Lazarus. Why did he offer £50 for a picture that is practically worthless?
Perhaps he wanted to do Nick a good turn.
Oh, but he is a dealer. He does not buy to sell at a loss. E. Monsieur Weiss. Why did he say what he did about his cousin's fanatical devotion to End House? Did he in fact receive the will? But why lie about it? F. Commander Challenger. I have no question against his name. Is that in itself suspicious? Which leaves us with X, the unknown. Is it possible that there is some mysterious person we have failed to take into account?
So, what do we do now?
We wait until the morning, my friend. Tomorrow, if I am not mistaken, certain things will arise.
The following day I awoke feeling weak, but with the fever abated. And with the morning's post came a letter from the parents of Maggie Buckley, whom we had met briefly at the inquest, enclosing a note she had written to them on the day of her arrival at End House, the day of her death.
If you would be so good as to read it to me, Hastings.
It's lovely weather here. Nick seems very well, if a little restless, but I cannot see why she should have telegraphed for me the way she did. Tuesday would have done just as well. No more now. We are going to have tea with some neighbours, Australians who have rented the lodge. Nick says they are kind, but rather awful. We'll write tomorrow.
The voice of the dead. And he tells us nothing.
Poirot positively rushed to the phone. Although his own contributions to the conversation were entirely non-committal, when he returned, his eyes were sparkling with excitement.
That was Monsieur Charles Weiss. Huh? Mademoiselle Nick's will, signed on the 25th of February, arrived at his office this morning.
Oh, do you think he's speaking the truth?
Well, you mean, has he had the will all along? It's certainly very curious. But I told you that if Mademoiselle were supposed to be dead, we should have the developments, and here they are.
Extraordinary. I suppose this is the will naming Frederica Rice the residuary legatee.
Monsieur Weiss said nothing about the contents, but there is very little reason to doubt that this is the same will.
So, we are back to our principal suspect.
Frederica Rice.
Or Freddy, as her friends insist on calling her.
Now, why disfigure such a pretty name? Freddy, ce n'est pas joli.
Well, there aren't many abbreviations of Frederica. It's not a name like Margaret, where you can have half a dozen.
What was it I was trying to think about when the phone rang? Something about the letter written by that poor murdered girl that struck me as curious. Let me look at it again.
He read it over to himself several times while I watched the boats racing across the bay.
Oh, but I have been blind, blind.
Well, what on earth's the matter?
So simple, and I could not see it. Oh, how could I be such a miserable imbecile?
Well, what is it? What couldn't you see?
Wait, do not speak. But yes, yes, it all fits in. All the things that have puzzled me, they all have their place.
You mean you know everything?
Nearly everything, all that matters. I shall send a telegram asking two questions, but the answers I already know. They are here, in the little grey cells.
But what happens when you receive the answers?
Do you remember that Mademoiselle Nick said she wanted to stage a play at End House?
Hmm.
Tonight, we shall stage such a play. But it will be a play directed by Hercule Poirot, and there will be a ghost in it, for Mademoiselle Nick will have a part to play.
What's it all about? What
no, 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 I will say no more. Tonight my little comedy will reveal the truth. It will be a play such as no one has ever seen. All our suspects shall be assembled at End House, and the murderer will be revealed.
It was a curious gathering that met that evening at End House. Everyone on the list of Poirot's suspects was seated round the table in the dining room, except for Ellen the housekeeper, who sat by the door. Frederica Rice wore a black dress, and Mr. Lazarus sat beside her, with George Challenger and Mr. Croft on the other side. Mrs. Croft was next to me in an invalid chair.
This is a surprise, isn't it? Makes a change for me, I must say. I think I shall try and get out more. Mr. Vise made a particular point of my coming.
Mr. Vise?
This is a rather unconventional gathering tonight, but then the circumstances are most unusual. In an ordinary situation, the will of the deceased is read after the funeral, but in deference to Monsieur Poirot's special wish, I am proposing to read it now. That is why you've all been asked to come here. The will has come into my possession in a rather strange manner. Although dated last February, it only reached me by post this morning. However, it is undoubtedly in the handwriting of my late cousin, and though a most informal document, it is properly attested. The will is quite short. This is the last will and testament of Magdala Buckley. I direct that all my funeral expenses should be paid, and I appoint my cousin, Charles Weiss, as my executor. I leave everything of which I die possessed to Mildred Croft, in grateful recognition of the services rendered by her to my father, Philip Buckley, which services nothing can ever repay. Signed, Magdala Buckley.
It's quite true. Philip Buckley was out all alone in Australia, and if it hadn't been for me... Well, I'm not going to go into that. A secret it has been, and a secret it had better remain. Nick knew all about it. Her father told her. We came down here because I'd always been curious about this end house Philip talked so much about, and that dear girl couldn't do enough for us. She wanted us to come and live with her, but we wouldn't do that, so she insisted that we should have the lodge, and not a penny's rent would she take.
Had you any knowledge of this, Monsieur Weiss?
None. I knew Philip Buckley had been in Australia, but I had never heard rumours of an attachment of any kind there.
And you won't get a word out of me about it. The secret goes to the grave with me.
Well, Mother, this is a surprise. Nick never told me what she was up to.
Dear, sweet girl. I only wish she could look down and see us now.
Well, perhaps she does. Who knows?
Perhaps she does. And since we are all seated here around this table, why do we not hold a seance?
A seance? Wouldn't that be rather...
It will be most interesting. My friend Hastings has the most remarkable mediumistic powers. I feel that the conditions are propitious. Do you not agree, Hastings?
Oh, yes, very, very propitious.
If you would be so good as to turn off the lights, Ellen.
Yes, sir.
Now, if you would all put your hands on the table so that each hand touches that of his neighbour. Yes. Yes, he is already in a trance. Now concentrate, all of you. Concentrate on Mademoiselle Nick.
Oh, she's already on the threshold. She is here.
Oh, come back from the grave.
And now we will switch on the lights.
Nick, you're real.
Yes, Freddy, I'm real. Thank you so much for all you did for my father, Mrs. Croft. But I'm afraid you won't be able to enjoy the benefits of that will just yet.
Oh, my God, take me away, Bert. Take me away quickly. It was all a joke, my dear. That was what it was. Just a joke. A
curious sort of joke.
Well, if it isn't my old friend Millie Merton.
Inspector Jack.
Hand up your old tricks again, I see.
No, it was just a joke.
Yeah, that's all it was, really.
Whoever is forgery you've ever run across, Millie Merton. A real artist.
You mean the will was a forgery?
Of course it was a forgery, Charles. I left the house to you and everything else to Freddy.
To me?
There's someone at the window.
Quick, he's out there.
Leave him to me.
Are you badly hurt, Freddy?
No, the bullet grazed my shoulder, that was all. It isn't even bleeding. Oh.
Give me a hand, will you, Hastings? The poor devil shot himself.
Come on, easy him into the chair.
Freddy, I didn't really mean it. I didn't. Freddy.
Oh. Is he?
Yes, madame, I fear he's dead.
He was my husband.
The unknown factor X.
Yes, I always felt that there was an X.
I'll get you a brandy, Freddy.
It's on that table behind you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yes, I could do with one. I might as well tell you everything, Monsieur Poirot. He was a hopeless drug addict. It was he who taught me how to take cocaine. I could never escape.